You look just like I did at your age.
Please don't say that, Dad.
I'm 16 years old. I'm not a child.
Don't you take that tone of voice with me, young lady.
Love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
You're listening to Honey, We Made a Disney Podcast. Two friends since taking driver's ed together. Now dads reliving the Disney movies we grew up on with our own kids. I'm JB Wagner.
And I'm Eddie Ferguson. And on today's episode, we fight the Nazis once again as we review Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. But first, JB, how are you and the family doing?
Good. We had a very emotional week this week. Specifically because of my son's loose tooth.
So first loose tooth.
No, he's had several. He's already lost several teeth, but this one was holding on for dear life, and he would not let us pull it. No, just dangling there. We wanted it, like, come on, man. So we kept on calling him Scraggle Tooth, which he did not enjoy. I'm not Scraggle Tooth, and it was just like he would close his mouth, but that would hang over. When he like smiled, and it was just like both adorable and I just want to pull it. So we didn't. We weren't going to do that to our son. So randomly we decide, hey, let's go get some ice cream. Hey, I'm just going to go Kroger and get some ice cream and bring it back home. Well, he decides, hey, I really want to go too. So I'm like, that's fine. Cool. So he goes and he wants to use these little shopping carts. It's like half the size of a normal cart and it's got like two layers to it.
Yep.
And I remember poignantly as we're about ready to like, he's grabbing it. I'm like, man, he's just slightly taller than this thing. It comes about face level with him. That's so interesting. Like how tall he's getting.
One may say tooth level.
Tooth level. That's a very good point, Eddie.
Foreshadowing.
So we go, we get the ice cream. We're coming back. We're using the self checkout. We ended up getting some M&Ms as well. Like I did the whole first purchase, do that. And I'm like, you know what? We should get some M&Ms to put with this. So then do a second transaction. So a little bit later, some other people kind of start filling up the other ones around us, the other checkouts around us. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to need to navigate this because it's a little tight in this spot. But no, he's like, no, Dad, I got this. I'm like, great, son. Great. Awesome. You do this. So I'm in front of him trying to walk out and then someone kind of comes in front of me. So I kind of just stop and immediately feel in the back of my calves. It just nails me. He just nails me with the shopping cart right in the back. And I bend down and I'm like down for like a couple beats where I'm just like, oh, this like hurts really bad. And then all of a sudden I start hear him like crying. And I think he's crying because he's like embarrassed or he's hurt me like or whatever. So I'm like, okay, I got to console him. But he's like starts really crying. And I'm like, okay, we need to like get out of here. So I physically pick him up, pushing the cart to get him over. I'm like, he's really crying if this is just like a normal like kind of embarrassed thing. So then I kind of look at him, blood coming down his face, coming everywhere. And I look and yep, that tooth came out. We rush to the bathroom, get him all cleaned up. He's like super on edge, like super like, we call it the carousel of sadness where he just can't get off. He can't calm himself down. I'm like grabbing paper towels and trying to wipe down. The tooth is gone. It's just really, really gone, but he's bleeding and stuff. Finally get him okay. Like not good, but just like, okay, get him to the van, get him in there. And he's like doing breathing exercises, can barely hold it together. And he's just silent the entire way home. I try to say, hey, buddy, you okay? And he's just like nothing. He's just sitting there, hands on his face, get him home. And then he unloads and is even worse again, tells everybody like what's going on. And then
he's got a bigger audience.
Yes. And he just can't get over the fact. He's like, Dad, where's my tooth? I'm like, buddy, it's gone. I'm not sitting there with a bloody child looking around for this tooth.
Get out of here.
And he's like, will I get my quarter? I'm like,
oh,
yes. And I had to tell him, 4 or 5 times, yes, you will get. And I literally had to go grab the quarter and give it to him. And he still was like, can you go back and get my tooth? Why do you need the tooth? You have a quarter. So it was a little bit of an emotional middle of this week. I think it was Wednesday or Thursday that he just like on another level, it was a whole experience, but the tooth is gone now and he's not Scraggletooth anymore. So,
and blood was shed in the Kroger.
Blood and tears. And he did not get any, I don't think he ended up getting any ice cream that night because by the time we got home and it was an ordeal and getting him calmed down.
Oh, that's finally, the saddest part of the whole story.
Yeah. I mean, he just went to bed. It's like, oh, wait, he never got the M&Ms and ice cream. So he lost. It was not a great
poor
day.
Poor kid.
Great parenting
now,
by
now
me.
Now I feel bad. I want him to get his ice cream and his M&Ms.
He eventually got it, but it was not that night. I don't know if he ever got the M&Ms. I think I just ate the M&Ms, but...
So you'll appreciate this, and next time you'll need to call in. Ed, my dad, is the tooth whisperer for our church. Like, he has helped so many parents with the removal of loose teeth. Plus, when kids come to church and they show that they're missing the tooth, he gives them $1.
Whoa. I want
you, my friend, are a cheapskate. A quarter with this inflation?
How many teeth? That's a lot of teeth.
What can your kid buy with a quarter?
All of the chores and stuff we do at home, it's for a quarter. You can't be paying out massive. Massive things.
So there you go. You'll have to call my dad. He's got all sorts of different tips that he helps people. And he pays $1. Not when I was a kid.
Of course not. No. Inflation.
No. Inflation now.
But enough about me and my awesome parenting skills. We got some Disney news to talk about. The first of which is Disney is re-releasing 8 of their films into theaters in honor of Disney 100. 8 total films in all. We've got Pirates of the Caribbean, the original one. We've got Toy Story. We got Frozen, Beauty and the Beast, not the new one, the original one. The Incredibles, Coco, Lion King, and Moana. Most of those are animated with, we got Pirates of the Caribbean in there as well. But...
So this is to celebrate the Disney 100, right? This is the 100th anniversary of the Walt Disney Company. Do you notice anything about the release dates of those movies?
No. Is there something special I should be looking at right now?
They're all within the past 30 years, most of them within the past 20 years. This is the 100th anniversary of the Walt Disney movie, and they're not releasing any of the movies that, let's say, Walt Disney actually worked on.
He did not see any of these.
Or that in any way represents the 100 years. Like, I think it would be cool if you were to release 10 movies, each from a different decade.
Ooh, that'd be a good idea.
Like if you're going to say this is to celebrate the 100 years of Disney, we all know that's not what they're doing. This is just a cash grab. This is an easy way for them to make, you know, money. And these are the ones that, okay, yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. Like, all of these I look at and I go, I would go and see all of these in the theater.
I think, well, you know who this is aimed at, right? It's not necessarily even for the kids or whatever. It's for... the parents. It's for us. It's for our age. It's putting out the movies. Hey, what are the ones that we saw when it came out, or it means a lot, or we've now started watching them with our kids? You can see there's a big gap between, well, I guess you've got Frozen in there. It being 30, the last 30 years, and that's as far back as they've gone. And it's not even Disney animated, all of this. Like, you've got Toy Story in there.
Right.
And Coco.
The oldest one is Beauty and the Beast, which I believe was released in 1993, or at least that's when it was up for Best Picture. So literally 30 years.
I'm so interested why they didn't go back farther into the vault, if you will.
I don't know. And that's been the big complaint that I've seen all over Twitter, is like, hey, nothing against these movies, but are you going to do more? If you're saying you're celebrating 100 years, like, at least do Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
The original,
on.
Yeah.
Like, how do you...
The first one.
How do you not include Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs in this?
I know that distribution, there might be some issues or having to pay residuals or whatever, but that does seem like a little bit of an oversight. I didn't necessarily think of that first. My first question is, how many of these would my own kids want to go go see because there's just not that many animated movies out there. I mentioned this before. I almost took my daughter to go see the new Little Mermaid. I was going to take my daughter to see Little Mermaid, opted not to because of she's just really young.
Moral issues.
Moral issues, too.
Don't remake movies.
This is morally wrong for them to not do it. No, but then, of course, Frozen's on here. And I'm like, ooh, this is like the universe telling me you missed the first pass, the first sign. You should have taken to that. Now I think it's probably time that you take her. So I am now seriously rethinking taking my daughter to the movie theater for the first time, even though the other thing is this, it comes out real close to her birthday. Now I'm like, my wife was like, what are we waiting for? We just need to do this. So this is probably going to be, I might make an exception just this one time. I still want to hold to my 5-year-old rule. I still believe in it, but this is too many opportunities. So you said,
Hold on. I've got to throw something out here because it's just dawned on me. Okay. We will be in the same city when The Lion King comes out into theaters.
Should we do?
I'm feeling a father-son double theater trip here.
We all go out and see it together. I think this needs to happen. I think this needs to happen. Let's go ahead and get the wives to get it on the calendar because Lord knows if we'll remember to actually do it.
They're going to have to watch the little kids.
So you kind of went down the road. What would, if you were in charge of the Disney 100 re-releasing movies back into theaters, what would have been your strategy for this? How would you do this differently?
So they are doing something, the merchandising branch is doing something called the Disney Eras. If you've not seen this, you need to get on Shop Disney and you need to look at it. They are releasing things from each decade of the Walt Disney Company. So for example, in January, they were releasing things from like the 20s. And it was like the Walt Disney Animation Studios. And like they had little notepads and t-shirts and stuff that are really cool that are era specific from that decade, right? And then they did the 30s, 40s and, and kind of highlighted different movies or things that were coming from that. So that's why my initial thought was release like your top movie from each decade. To me, that makes so much more sense to kind of go through each decade. What was your biggest movie? I mean, that's going to be hard. There's a couple of, hard decades like your 90s or your teens. But that's how I would have done it. I think I might have stuck to animation. I think I might have just said like, listen, that's what made this company. That's what our roots were. So to throw Pixar in there, to throw Pixar is the one that kind of throws me for a loop. Pirates kind of makes sense, but
there's three Pixar films plus the live action Pirates film. So there's really not that much Disney animation films here. And only one of them two of them are traditional 2D animation as well. So yeah, so that's going to be going from basically this coming weekend, July 7th, all the way through October, right into holiday time, and a couple weeks before we get to their animated movie, Wish, that will be coming out this fall. So yeah, check that out. I know we're probably going to take our kids to go see something because there's actually an animated film to watch in theaters, which is great. Yes. Next, Eddie, I know you are dying to know if this was going to come to reality, and we got it. We are getting Rogers the Musical in real life, not just little bit parts from the movies that we've seen it in. And it's coming to Disney California Adventure. Eddie, how excited are you about this?
Has come. It's already premiered. It's already, I think it started this past weekend. And from what I've even seen on Twitter is like, it is hugely popular. Like they sell a premiere seating area where you get like a popcorn bucket and early seating, upselling everything. And that has like sold out for like, I don't know how long, but like for like a good chunk of time. So even like the premiere, like there's high demand. There's a lot of people interested in this.
So this is at the Hyperion Theater. I think I'm saying that right. Hyperion Theater in Disney, uh-huh. California Adventure. We've watched the Frozen show there before. They've had Aladdin and other things. So this is a big deal. I think it works perfectly for what that whole area is becoming with Marvel kind of taking over the Marvel campus, taking over that whole entire area, the rebranding of a lot of the rides there and stuff. So I think it was a smart move by them. The two songs that they're using that you've seen before, Save the City from Hawkeye, that's the one where they actually had a full production and you can see the whole thing and it's Broadway. That's the moment for sure that I think a lot of us fans nowadays have seen recently. Star Spangled Man was the one I'd forgotten about. That was actually from Captain America First Avenger way back when in the period piece time of that film.
And if you remember at the last D23, they actually did that full number live on stage when they announced that this was coming. So if you want to see the full number already, that's out there. And I think a couple other snippets and stuff of the show they have out on Disney's YouTube channel. If you wanted to see like a minute or two of like a sizzle reel of the whole show.
It's interesting how Marvel is kind of taking moments from the movies and making them real life. This is one of them. But then the other one is Ant-Man's book and how you can actually buy Ant-Man's biography or autobiography now. I love that they're actually bringing them into real life where you can interact with it a lot more. And that's obviously due heavily to the fact that it's Disney making these movies. Like, it's going to be a little bit harder for Netflix to do the same thing with like Stranger Things. Although you are getting a little bit of that crossover with Domino's Pizza. It has a lot of Stranger Things stuff as well. But this is just another moment of Disney being like, you know what? If our fans went crazy about this when they saw it in the movies or saw it in the shows, why not bring it to the real life? And they found a great place for that here. Do you know if it's at any of the other parks or is it specifically to Disney California Adventure?
No. So it can only be in the United States. It can only be in California Adventure.
That whole east of the Mississippi danger zone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So theoretically, though, this could go to Paris and to Hong Kong, where the other two Avengers campuses are. I don't know if it would. I don't know how that would play well in those markets. But that being said, like, and this isn't just like them throwing something together. Like they got, the music is by Alan Menken, Mark Shaman, and Christopher Lennertz, who all have like Tonys. You know, like they know how to write a musical. The music from this is pretty legit. In all the other areas, like they went out and got people who know how to make musicals. Which I think is really interesting. And Marvel has done a good job at this. Like everything, that Avengers campus, I've not been, but everything I've seen, it's pretty well done. But I think the key is they invest in characters. Like if a show hits Disney Plus, even just a show, that character is in Avengers campus like right away. And I think this is another sign of that, of like Marvel, doing fun, really clever things. Like you mentioned, even with Ant-Man's book, of kind of making this feel more real and interactive. If I were there, I would sit through this. I mean, I would go to this. I don't know if I would go just to see this and seek it out. But if I was already there, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I would make the time to see it.
So next, last little bit of Disney news. We talked about it last week. So there's been an impending negotiations between SAG, the Screen Actors Guild, and the studios, along with the WGA strike that's happening right now that shut down a lot of television work. The date was coming up, and right on the eve of it going to a strike, they extended their negotiations. They're now punching it out a couple more weeks till after the 4th of July holidays and everybody can come back together. The word has been so far that they have been productive, maybe not fully getting to where they want to be, of course, yet. But it's still in that weird place where this could be really bad. This could get really ugly really quickly. I know for you and I, we've talked about living through the last WGA struggle in 2007, I believe, 2007 time. But we kind of made it through it. Like, there was still television. There were still things being made. There was still late night. That was the big thing I remember a lot of, is like the late night hosts having to do their own content. I don't have any memory of SAG ever going through something like this. This feels like a bigger thing because it's bad to say it. They've maneuvered their way around writers. They can't maneuver their way around mm-hmm. actors. There's just no way. Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
No, and I think this will, I have no idea. I'm in no way knowledgeable enough to like guess if this is actually going to happen or not. If it does, like, yeah, you're right. It would be massive. I mean, the article that you sent me, I think, did a good job of like showing just how much it would affect like every different area of visual arts. I don't know how else to phrase that. Of just kind of like TV, movies, everything.
Yeah. So Deadline has a great article that they came out with a few days ago called "What Happens to Hollywood and Beyond." Not a Toy Story reference. If the actors go on strike. And so they kind of lay out, hey, they're not on strike yet, but what could we be seeing in the future? What's going to happen with all these multiple areas? Already we're like, starting with TV, it's already, a lot of the TV is kind of on hold, not happening. The fall TV schedule is a giant question mark of if anything's going to be on there. What I thought was interesting that they called out is game show and competition shows, which, at least the ones that we watched, there's some sort of a star actor involved with some of that. I know back in the day, it was like right. the Joe Rogans of the world doing Fear Factor, and your favorite person doing Survivor, if you want to do a shout out for him.
Yes, Jeff Probst.
Yep. So, but honestly, like, we watch a lot of like Lego Masters, and that's got Job in it. It's got, I always say Joe, but that's not his real name. I always call him the rest of
Will
development.
Arnett.
Will Arnett. So like, you got him in there, like, he wouldn't be on set for those kinds of things. And I think a lot of the people that are involved, like the Probst of the world, he probably maybe mm-hmm. wouldn't cross the picket line, even though I don't know if he's necessarily a SAG in this. I don't know if he has a SAG card or not, whatever. So obviously,
my understanding is like, you can't get on TV like that unless you are.
Like, you have to get one to be actually be on. Yes, you're right. You're right. So now we go to feature films. There's right now there, it doesn't look like there, no movies have left 2023 yet. Like, they haven't been pushed out of 2023 to 2024 or beyond. There's been, Marvel has done a lot of chicanery on release dates that we've already talked about, moving those kind of around down. But so far, no movies have been ousted from this year, like moved, like we had during the pandemic, where a bunch of them left. That's still kind of a question mark. Are any of them going to? There's several movies that race to finish production and pickups by July. Beetlejuice, a lot of these movies didn't know were happening. Beetlejuice 2, Bad Boys 4. The next of the Ghostbuster reboots is like the reboot part sequel to the reboot kind of a thing.
I only knew that was happening because Casey Neistat stumbled onto the set in one of his recent vlogs.
That's right.
That's the only reason I know that's going on.
Yeah. So far, they aren't done. But if there's a SAG issue and they can't come to agreement, it's going to shut down all of feature films. They will be on complete halt right now. And a number of them are already, because of the WGA strike and a number of Marvel films included in that. So this was funny. They talked about award shows. Like, this is a big deal that the award shows might not happen because Hollywood loves to celebrate themselves. So the Emmys, that's a big one. September 18th is the actual Emmy award show. But they're saying, hey, they start talking about it and figuring and planning it all out now. This is the time when they're talking about it in July. So sometime this month, they got to make the call. Are we going to have this? Are we not? It kind of looks like it's going to happen around the time of when they're going to come to an agreement or not, like the extension on the time frame. So I thought that was interesting. The Emmys might not happen, which didn't we like not have the Emmys for a while? Or no, Golden Globes. Was it Golden Globes? They just like would announce the names for a couple years because they couldn't find a host or something.
No, the Golden Globes were boycotted by so many people because of issues within the foreign press.
Yep.
And so NBC just said, okay, we refuse to even air it.
So we're going to get that kind of an award
show. We're going to get a lot of weird stuff.
Yep. We talked about Comic-Con before. Warner Brothers and Paramount are the only ones kind of potentially going to be going to it. But
looking at this again, I do wonder, like, is the extending of the contract at all? Okay, they're trying to figure something out. You know, are they going to? Is that a good sign or not? But it'll be interesting. I think it'll be... if you remember back to the last strike... what they would do is like wrestle up, like you said, like these weird reality shows where they don't need but this is the hard thing, is you need shows that don't need writers and shows that don't need actors. So what are you left with? You're left with like Dog the Bounty Hunter, you know, you're left with the people in Florida hunting boa constrictors. Have you seen that show?
Well, you're saying docuseries. That's what you're talking about. That's what's gonna.
Yeah, I guess it is like docuseries. I think like that's what you're left with, and we're gonna see like, you know, Dog the Bounty Hunter New Orleans and Dog the Bounty Hunter Chicago and all that fun stuff.
So the only winner from most all of this is potentially going to be like Netflix. Like they're going to be able to continue to pull in, hey, oh, we were already going to release this later on. We're going to pull that content up. Oh, how about some international flair stuff? How about some other things? They can still bring over content from other countries. UK isn't as affected in this. Maybe their actors and actresses kind of in solidarity don't do that kind of stuff there. But I think, and even in this article, they talk about the Wall Street's reaction potentially to this, and they're looking at it's going to help Netflix. And what the way they put it in the article is linear TV gets hurt and the streamers benefit, and Netflix is the biggest streamer. They're the ones that can weather this storm, and they're the ones that can come out good. There are other studios that are in a good place, like Fox has Sports and News. Disney obviously still has the parks, still has ESPN. So some of these other studios are still going to be able to be okay and they're not hurting, but you might see some of the other studios that this is all they got. Maybe they're the ones to help bridge the gap and try to make something happen. But we've talked about this before. Studios have been losing money in making movies of late. The artists that are part of the making process and are the faces on the posters, they're not getting paid as much as they used to. Writers aren't getting paid as much as they used to. This thing is all feeling like it's crumbling. And at the same time, I still don't see a place where we don't have streaming channels. I don't know that doesn't happen. I just don't know how anybody wins in this scenario.
Something, you know, isn't adding up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody's being paid too much here. Right.
Could it be executives? Right, like
your numbers have got to, if your numbers aren't adding up, okay. Like, and what's odd is you look at some of these numbers from the box office and it's not like they're bad results. It's in many ways, they're just kind of like leveling out from these, the addiction to the massive blockbusters. I mean, you hear $30, $40, $60 million, like that used to be average for just kind of, you know, your normal movies. And that was like, okay. Like I remember, what was the like found footage horror movies that like Paranormal Activity, was that the name of it?
Paranormal Activity, yeah.
It was like a budget. It was like a budget of like $2 million or whatever to make it. And it was like a huge when it made like $50 million or whatever. Yep. And like, boom, they just made tons of them because, I mean, that's huge margin.
But that's the problem. I think, yeah, that's, they're not, they're the budgets for these films, these franchises
are massive.
Are not 5 million. It's not
massive.
It's 200, like we talked about. It's like 200 million for Elemental, and it's bringing in 29 million at the box office. That's where I know we other places have decried the death of the middle movie of like movies that are like $20 million movies that make 50. Like maybe this will usher in back to that world where they will start, hey, let's start doing like 10. If all the movies are going to make 50, 60 million, let's make $10 million movies. Let's make 15, 20, get some of those ones like that we kind of grew up on that were kind of the fun, kind of quirky movies.
Well, that's what we've reviewed here. This is what we've spent the past 4 years doing, or however long we've been doing this. Is you go back to, that was a Michael Eisner. He used a baseball analogy to say, like, we can't always have home runs. Let's produce some singles and some doubles, a couple triples, you know, like, let's think through this. And then I think the Iger era has been home run, home, like, we have to have a home run
franchise, sequels.
And you can't do that. You just can't. Yes. A lot of your movies stink, but if you're only losing just a couple of million on it, it's not that bad. But what's happened is this addiction to getting a home run on these massive movies every time, you're losing hundreds of millions of dollars when they don't work. To me, it just makes more sense to go back to the strategy of, I mean, the movies we grew up on, like the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, all those movies, you just had like nice, simple stories.
Different times, Eddie. It's different times. Maybe we'll go back. Maybe we won't.
I think you're right. Streaming's not going anywhere. This is going to, it'll have to sift itself out. There's too much money to be made. There's too, you know, somebody's going to crack the code and figure it out. It'll probably just take some time and some uncomfortableness for a while. And eventually, I hope that it does just balance itself out where we get a little bit of everything at the movies.
That's what we want, guys. We just want to have a great time.
We want a little bit of everything.
It's okay.
You know what I want? Sometimes I want ice cream. Sometimes I want M&Ms. And every once in a while, I want to put the M&Ms on the ice cream.
That's what my son wanted, and he didn't get it. But I want my choice. And we're not getting it right now. We want a little bit more. I denied him that. Oh, goodness. Okay. Well, that's the Disney news for today. We are going to put on hold once again for another week in a row our march going through all of the Disney movies from 1988 to 2005, aka our childhood. We're getting pretty close to the end. We've only got like 4 or 5 movies left. We're kind of stringing it out a little bit long here.
We're dragging it out.
Yep. But today we are here to talk about the latest Disney film that just hit theaters, which is Indiana Jones 5. The Dial of Destiny.
Cue the Disney sound effect.
Okay, the IMDb description for Indiana Jones Dial of Destiny is this. Archaeologist Indiana Jones races against time to retrieve a legendary artifact that can change the course of history. Solid.
That's great.
Don't give me too much.
Great description.
I'm sure they'll probably tweak it to give too many things away and put people's name in parentheses later on. But right now, that's actually kind of sounds a little bit like every Indiana Jones movie. I will say that. It might be a little too vague, but it's okay. It's okay.
Well, yes, you're right. Archaeologist Indiana Jones races against time to retrieve legendary artifact that can change the course of blank.
It's all of them. All of them are that.
The only one that I think doesn't fit that would be the Temple of Doom.
Which we'll get to. We'll get to all of our, we're going to rank those later. But Eddie, how excited were you to see Indiana Jones, this latest one?
I've been pretty excited. I want to say it was.
You let yourself get excited.
The second or third most anticipated movie of the summer. Like the movies I'm most excited for this summer have been this one, Mission Impossible,
of course,
and Oppenheimer. Like those are the ones where I'm like, it's on the calendar. I've asked my wife to like go have, you know, time in the movies. And so I was getting excited, and then it's been that Disney Lucasfilm tango of no, don't get too excited. Ooh, but you're luring me in. Oh, that's like, oh, no. I'm not gonna be tempted by your sultry moves here. And then I'm excited. Is this it? So that's been the tango for I would say the past 6 months. And then I went into this going, I don't think this is gonna be good. Like I just don't think, like I heard a couple things here and there that they were gonna be super agenda pushy. I'm like, I'm just not gonna get excited. And so I went into it, I think, with good tempered expectations.
Me too. So I was in the same spot, low expectations. I think maybe did it premiere at Cannes or something like that? And it like,
yes.
They didn't get like a standing ovation or anything like that. Like they didn't get any, there wasn't much buzz about it. So I kind of said, oh, maybe this will be low. And maybe it just helps us. We had a better experience with Elemental because we lowered our expectations, although we decried that movie quite a bit. Had low expectations for this one as well.
And I got to say, I really liked this movie. And a part, I think, was because I went into it with such low expectations. I was like kind of surprised by like a lot of things in it. There was the whole time, like, again, as I'm watching it, I felt that feeling that I have felt for the past 6 months of like, no, Eddie, even as the movie's going on, I'm like, don't get excited. They're going to ruin this. There's going to be some weird, freaky alien thing happen at the end, you know? I got to say, beginning to end, I really enjoyed this movie. It's not going to be like my favorite Indiana Jones of all time. We're going to rank our five here soon. I really enjoyed it, especially like the opening sequence with the train and his escape there. I thought even like the de-aging effects that they put on Harrison Ford looked fine to me. Like it didn't bother me. I think some of the other de-aging things like just felt kind of weird and creepy to me. I don't know about you, but for me, it felt really fine and normal. That's just kind of like my quick reaction is I enjoyed it. I thought that this was a much better conclusion to the Indiana Jones franchise than Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls. Like that's no question asked for me on that one. But I really enjoyed it. Did you enjoy this or no?
I came in with low expectations, was a little worried, and I enjoyed it. I had fun. It was a popcorn. It was like more than a popcorn flick because popcorn thing makes you think turn off your brain. This definitely doesn't have turn off your brain. This is like, ooh, where are they going with this? Honestly, it had a lot of vibes from National Treasure. Like some of the same things that we love about National Treasure, this kind of had that in there as well. Especially when they get to like trying to solve the puzzle of when she's walking around the boat, like walking through the puzzle that they've pulled out of the ocean. Then they like melt the puzzle and then there's something inside it. Like they had a lot of fun elements like that to this. It wasn't all that like National Treasure is its own thing. It kind of mixed and borrowed from some of those, but for sure the best parts of this film, one of which is just the action. The action of this all feels really, really good, really strong, really fun at times.
And propels the story. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like any of the action was unnecessary.
It wasn't Michael Bay action, just random hot dog cart exploding. Yeah.
Right.
I also felt like the cinematography from the very first trailer I've seen of this, it felt like every shot looked beautiful. Even if some of the things were dark and moody and like anything underwater nowadays just is going to be dark and like hard to tell what's going on. But...
Right.
All of the, it looks cinematic. It looked very beautiful. The shots and the lighting and the way that they compose things, it's all very intentional and great. So I felt like they maybe were trying very, very hard to live up to Steven Spielberg, who did the first ones of this. I thought it was done really well.
I heard a reviewer say that this one was more Spielberg-esque than Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
I don't remember a lot from the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, I can't really tell you.
But he definitely has a Spielberg has a way and a style of introducing characters, of framing the characters, of pacing. Like this, I think the scene on the boat when she's solving the riddle is a really good example of that, of just how he paces the movement of thinking, of people processing information. Spielberg has a way of blocking that out that just really comes alive. And this is not Spielberg. This is James Mangold. There's sequences where you would wonder, like, are you sure Spielberg didn't do this? Because it does feel like it.
They definitely used a really good director for this, James Mangold. He's done two Wolverine movies, Ford versus Ferrari, which was an Oscar movie a couple of years ago. He's going to be doing one of the new Star Wars films, Dawn of the Jedi, which I'm super excited about. So that was a really good choice for this.
He's announced for doing one of the new Star Wars films. JB.
Announced. This time next year, who knows who will be directing that, and even if anybody's still attached to it. The other one thing I want to call out in here, this was my first movie or show anything to watch Phoebe Waller-Bridge. She is an Emmy Award winning actress. She also is the showrunner, creator of the show Fleabag. It's a UK show went on to win some Emmy Awards. This is my first experience seeing her in anything. And there was a little bit of a catching up for me to get of like figuring out her way of talking and being, and it's a little bit different than other actresses. But by the time it ended, I really enjoyed her arc throughout this. You know that they're going to get tighter by the end of this, but even just where they start, where she's like conning him to the very end, where she's like, we're doing spoilers already on this, but it's like saving his life. Like I didn't feel like they had jumped a bunch of steps. It felt like they had been through something together. They had grown together. And then by the end, and even some of the reasons why she got into doing this, like she was kind of an abandoned child. Like she didn't have her dad anymore. He had gone crazy. Her godfather had kind of abandoned her as well. Left her. Like it kind of was earned and it kind of made sense. And you also just kind of like her. I just kind of like her character, and she's not overbearing. She's not mean spirited. She's just got her own agenda going on. And I kind of got it and felt it. And I was good. I enjoyed her arc throughout this and their relational arc throughout this story.
So I would agree. I liked her arc. I guess where I would push back is I would say the beginning, especially when you're in, Tangier with her, and like she's selling off the artifact. I did not like her. I thought she was annoying. And it like there was a good like especially in the race, like going through the city scene, she's just kind of like snipping at him and has all these lines, and it's just kind of like, it felt, I was just waiting for her to be like, okay, boomer. You know, like it was very Karen-esque at moments for me.
I didn't think it crossed that line.
And in my mind, I'm going, if this whole movie is her like this, I don't think I can handle this. Cause it's like, don't belittle Indiana Jones here. Like this is one of the most beloved characters in all of film history, but I agree with you. I like the arc. There is this moment where you see her really switch. And I want to say the moment is the scene on the boat when she's solving the puzzle, hands, you know, the dynamite over to Indy. That whole sequence is when that really began to turn for me. And by the end, you're right. Like when she takes the kids out for ice cream at the end, it's like, okay, I like this character. And I like that I didn't like her at the beginning, you know, that we got a full arc with her and that it felt complete.
Yeah, so she was definitely one of the highlights of this film for me. I would disagree with you on the whole CGI. It didn't impair it completely. I still enjoyed those opening sequences with on the train and stuff. But I, at this point, like, I know we've had him in older films. So that's kind of why we're trying to do the de-aging process instead of hiring a younger actor to do that. And maybe they don't want a solo event to happen for this. But right. at the same time, I'm like, I know it's CGI and I can look at his face and it's not quite right. Like, they can get it as good as they want to. It's, and I don't know why, maybe like Luke Skywalker, I didn't have as big of a problem when we had him in those Boba Fett episodes. Those were amazing. I just don't know why. I think there's a problem. It's like, why did we have to do this at all? Why can't we just get younger actors for this? Come on.
Yeah. And I mean, I
applaud them. You didn't have the same experience.
No, for me, I knew it was that. And I guess my first response when like they shine the light on his face after they pull the hood off, I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. That looks really good. But I mean, my mind immediately is thinking, I know this isn't real.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the point I'm trying to make. For you, you were like, oh, that's not real. And then you move on.
But it's pretty good. And then I moved on.
I thought it was good. Like, whatever they did was good. But also my brain's like, but that's not what he looks like now.
Yeah.
Like, that's not at all what he looks like now. And they're trying to make him look like what he looks like now. And it's just like, this is fake. It was like my brain was like, this is fake. This is fake. This is fake. I don't know. That was, maybe it's because Luke's...
I took more issue with some of the fake CG, like, landscapes. There's like a moment where they like look up at the, like, what is it? The Alps or something like that. It's like obviously really, really fake. The old Sicily stuff, like obviously fake. Like, and I think that that pulls me out more than anything, especially in an Indiana Jones movie where, I mean, you go back to Raiders and Spielberg has these beautiful shots in the desert with, you know, the sun lighting, you know, lighting behind and giving this perfect silhouette of Indiana Jones. Like, that's the standard. And that's film from the 80s. And it, to me, still looks better than this weird CG painted landscape that you're putting into, you know, even this movie. So that's where my beefs with the CG comes from is with that. But in that opening sequence, I just thought it was a really fun ride. It was a compelling enough of a narrative and a sequence that I forgot about it and I just enjoyed the ride.
I thought Mads Mikkelsen, he's always a good go-to bad guy, and he's a Nazi. Easy win there.
But can we stop there for a second? Like, for me, that was the highlight. Like, I thought Mads was arguably my favorite in the whole film.
What? Well,
I just thought it was a really good, strong character. Also, like, we've been griping on here forever. Like, I just want a really good bad guy. Like, I just want a bad guy who's bad. And, hey, we got it, you know? And, of course, you got to drum up the old cliche of he's a Nazi, because those are the really only bad guys. But
it's less cliche than it's just a part of the canon of, if it's going to be an Indiana Jones, there has to be a Nazi.
Yes. So I really liked that. I thought that for him, his character was so, so good. Really enjoyed it.
How much did you love them tying it into the astronaut moon landing?
Oh, yes.
Moon Day. Are you celebrating? Yes. Do you celebrate Moon Day July 20th every year, Eddie?
I do not celebrate Moon Day
You're going to this year, though. You're going to think about it. I'm going to text you.
Well, I celebrated it a few years ago when it was the 50th anniversary, and they did like all of the big things where they like projected on the Washington Monument and stuff. That was cool. If you haven't seen a video of that, where they 3D projected the Saturn V rocket on the Washington Monument, you should YouTube that when we're off here.
Okay.
It's pretty sweet. It's pretty cool. So that's the only time I've ever celebrated. But I thought that was cool. I was trying to explain this to somebody. I brought somebody to the movie with me who'd never seen any Indiana Jones movies. And I was really nervous because I'm like, this is such a great franchise. I'm nervous this being your first one and this being ruin it. But it was just kind of like, yeah, let's go for it. He ended up really enjoying it. He wants to watch the other movies. We're going to do that.
This is a good one to do that with. If you haven't ever seen an Indiana Jones film, this is a good one to see, because there's really not any callbacks. There's not like crazy, they brought back the bad guy from the first one. They didn't do any of that kind of stuff.
So it's Salah, he comes back, but I think if you don't know him from the other movies, you don't need to know. He's just a friend.
The hat, the whip, that's about it.
Yeah. And there's a few scenes like the very end when
that's right.
He and Marion. And she's doing the kisses on
but
the
they
elbow.
Do it, but they do enough to like she could have been just an everyday wife that that he just is has had they're going through a divorce or whatever and they've got her photo on the wall. That's fine.
I thought they speaking of how connecting to other movies, the way they killed off Shia LaBeouf, but making it like a significant element of the story.
So this is where my complete lack of knowledge of the Crystal Skull. He was his son?
Yes. Yes. Mud Williams, I think was his name. That he was his son. And so everybody's like, oh, you please don't bring back his character. Like it was just, it was trying way too hard. And so like killing him, you know, movies do this all the time where they just like kill off the character they don't want to bring into the next movie. And nobody talks about it. Like it's just a throwaway line. I can't think of another example where like they make it a significant character moment
without
for
them
him.
Being there. Yeah.
Without him being there. I'm like, whoa, good writing. Like whoever came up with that being the emotional beat. And that scene with Harrison Ford on the boat where he's talking about going back to that moment. So emotional. Like, oh, yeah. Like Harrison Ford isn't Harrison Ford just because he's, you know, a great action star or whatever. No, he's like a really great actor. And he shows it in this
very moment. Emotional in that. Yeah, 100%. We got to talk about the ending, the meeting Archimedes. Did it go too far? Them literally flying into the past to and meeting Archimedes, seeing the whole battle, the battle in there in Sicily, or I guess Syracuse. Was it too much? Too weird?
And for me, like when it first happened and you look out the plane window and you realize what's going on, I was like, whoa, okay, that's cool. It started to get a little weird when like Archimedes is there and Harrison Ford or Indiana Jones is thinking about staying.
Yep.
Like the whole time I'm going, no. You can't have him stay. Like you can't have him stay. You can't do that. And so like as I'm walking out of the theater, it had just a little bit of a weird taste in my mouth, but I stopped for a second and I went, hold on. In Indiana Jones, we've had the Angel of Death fly out of the Ark of the Covenant and consume people.
Yep.
We've had them rip a beating heart out of people and lower them into flames. We've had, you know, a knight survive from the Crusades and water heal them. We've had aliens, you know, all coming together. Yep. Like, okay, this works for this frame. Like, it actually, I don't think it would have been an Indiana Jones movie if it hadn't come up to that moment.
You're right. That's what I was doing the mental gymnastics in my head as it was happening. I was like, wait, we've had aliens. We've had other crazy things in biblical proportions happening.
Literally.
I think this is okay. And I started getting uneasy when I thought they were going to leave him in history. And it's like, this is weird. I mean, it kind of is serendipitous of like a guy who spends all his time talking and preserving things from the past now gets to live in the past. But when she's like, I've watched enough movies, like basically she didn't say this, but I've watched enough movies to know you can't jack with the past. If we do this, it'll change history. Punches him and knocks him out. Although I don't know how he goes from knocked out there all the way back to his apartment in New York City. That's weird.
But I
kind of like jump.
Oh, see, I disagree. I really like that because I sat there in that moment going that we went through so much of the dial and everything to get back. I don't want to retread that in the getting back. I liked the beat. For me, like my favorite moment was boom, she punches him to knock him out.
Me too.
That's an Indiana Jones moment. I like that.
I like that. I like that as well. I'm saying
don't want to know. I like the like, okay, yeah, they used the dial and they got back through. Okay, yep, that's how that works. Okay.
I'm still asking myself though, how did he get in his bed? Like, was he unconscious that entire trip. Like, it'd be different to go like...
They injected him with something. Who knows? They pumped him full of morphine.
I'm sorry, but that's just where my brain went. It was just like, wait, how did he get into his bed and he's in the sling and, oh, evidently he's had a medical procedure and he's fine, but he's just now waking up, but he doesn't have other questions and... How did I get here? What happened? Where did he go? Archimedes! I don't know. It was kind of funny. But no, the punch was great. Like, where there's like, no, we're not going to do this. Great. Yes, this is exactly where he needed to come home and deal with his stuff. But it kind of left the door open. Like, could we see him in another one? But he's literally said this is his last one, right?
The last 10 minutes of this movie for me were perfect. This is how you want an Indiana Jones movie to end. And also, I would say for the way Harrison delivers those last 10 minutes are soul crushing, but also like breathing excitement and hope into you, right? That moment when he sits down and they kind of rehash everything, and you can see in his eyes like why he wanted to stay. Because he had no reason to come back here. And when he asked that question of like, but for who? Like his look on his face when he says that, like, I almost cried. Like that was so gut-wrenching of like, yeah, like I've sat there with so many people in that age of life where so many people have died. So many friends are no longer there. They yep. start to lose that will to stick around. And you see that there on his face. And then, of course, for Miriam to walk back through the door. And it was like, oh, yep. of course. You need Marion Ravenwood. Like, she's his reason. And for it to, like, come together and tie up nicely like that. And then to pull the hat off the line at the very end. I don't think there's going to be another. Of course not. But I like that you had that moment. Because there's this little seed in your mind of like, Indy is still out on an adventure. And as long as like Indy is still out on an adventure, I can still go out on an adventure.
my other gripe that I had was, did nobody think to check the other half of the ship this whole time? It's not like it was down that far. You could see the light of the sky coming in. Why did nobody thought to check the other half of the ship this whole like, thousands of years?
They were afraid of eels.
Come on. I did like the connection between the eels and snakes. I was Me like, too. Oh, I see what Clever. You did there. They didn't have any like cuts on them though, somehow, after all those eel fights and bites and scrapes and stuff like that. That was kind of odd.
Yeah, and I like that you had the like going through the tight quarters and all the creepy crawly bugs are falling on them. You know, the cave sequence of solving all those things, very puzzle. Like he just pulled on some really great, you know, storytelling levers that in many ways, yeah, we reference, you know, something like National Treasure, others. But it was Indiana Jones who created this kind of genre for movies. So it felt good to kind of go back. In many ways, it's like when you watch an Agatha Christie, or if you've ever even seen an Agatha Christie play, it almost feels campy. It feels like it's making fun of the genre,
yep.
but it's because she created it. And then everything else that has like come back, like they're just mimicking that. So there are definitely some moments in this where I'm going, actually, this is the franchise that created all of this.
So she can do it because she's the OG.
Yes.
Indiana Jones, OG.
I think we've come to the moment where we need to give our ranking. This is the last Indiana Jones movie. There are five. The very first is not Indiana Jones. It's just called Raiders of the Lost Ark. People have got to remember that. That's why if you ever hear an interview with Steven Spielberg, he never calls these the Indiana Jones movies. He calls them the Raiders movies. Hmm. I always think that's interesting if you listen to him. So you have Raiders of the Lost Ark, Temple of Doom. Then you have The Last Crusade. We jump forward quite a few decades and we hit The Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls. And then what we've just been talking about, The Dial of Destiny. JB, I propose we go from 5 to 1. What is your number 5?
My number 5 is the movie that I still don't remember anything about. I've alluded to it already, but I sat down to watch this for the first time at somebody's home. They turned it on. And 20 minutes into this film, I fell asleep. And it was middle of the afternoon. So it was that boring, that bad. And I've never tried to watch it ever since. AKA why I didn't even know that he was Indiana Jones' son, because I didn't know, because I fell asleep in it. So Crystal Skull is going to get my number 5.
I would agree. Kingdom of Crystal Skull is number 5 for me. With that being said, the opening sequence, like the first like 5 minutes or so, is like really good classic Indiana Jones. And I really like it, but nothing else in this movie holds up for me. So number 5 is Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Number 4.
Number 4 for me is actually going to be Temple of Doom. It's a really weird movie to me. The heart for sure. All of the tribal things. It's by far my least favorite. It is not an enjoyable movie to me. I do not like sitting watching this film. It's weird, awkward, a lot of satanic ritual stuff in it that just rubs me the wrong way, and like demons and souls and all kinds of stuff. So for that, I have it number 4 because it just was one of the least enjoyable of all the movies to watch.
My number 4 is this one, The Dial of Destiny. I really like it. But it doesn't come close to the original 3. Still strong. But yeah, it's number 4 for me. Cause original 3 are just too strong for me.
You'll have to get some, when we get to Temple of Doom, you can then refute me of like why it's better than this movie, because I had this movie at number 3. Dial of Destiny, because I just had a lot of fun times watching this. I've got the other ones higher up on there for sentimental reasons, but Dial of Destiny, it was a great ride. It was better than I thought it would going to be. And so that's why I kind of put it in the middle of the pack here, because the last two just were absolute train wrecks for me that I just did not care about. So Dial of Destiny is my number 3.
My number 3 is, this is going to be controversial, but here it is. It is actually the original Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Do tell.
I love it. In many ways, I would say Raiders is a perfect movie. It comes down to it. I like the other two more.
I just enjoy the
ride of, I love the ride on the other ones just a little bit more. But I mean, you've got to hear me when I say this. This is one of the hardest rankings. Like, I am splitting hairs putting these.
You had more of your childhood wrapped up in Indiana Jones, a lot more than I did, I would say.
I watched these three movies on a regular basis.
And I didn't watch these nearly as much. We'll get to my origin for the Raiders of the Lost Ark when I watch it, when I get to that one. But yeah, you've had a lot more time to chew on this than I have. This was more of an adult time, like in the adult stage of my life, going back and just catching up and watching them.
Yeah. So what is your number 2?
My number 2, I'm going to go with Last Crusade, partially because I have used this phrase more than anything, probably in any movie phrase that I've ever watched in my life. This is probably the one I quote more than anything. Although snip, snap, sip, snap has come up a lot recently for me from The Office. But Last Crusade, when he says, "You have chosen poorly."
Poorly.
I have used that so many times. It's not even funny how many times. So I love Sean Connery in this. I love their back and forth. Their tango, or whatever you want to call it. I think it's a great random choice to have for Indiana Jones's father. Like, not the first person I would have thought of, like Sean Connery as Harrison Ford's dad. Not the person, but it works really well.
There's only 12 years between them. And so they purposely kept Sean Connery like in a gray beard the whole time, mm-hmm. and Harrison very clean shaven, to kind of help separate that. But they're actually not that far apart in age, only 12 years.
So that's kind of, I love it, but I'm just going to go ahead and do number 1. The reason I did number 1 is just because it's the classic. It's such great action and storytelling from beginning to end. So many iconic moments. Before I saw this movie, the original one, which is my number 1, the Raiders movie, I actually read this first. Like, the library, our local library had adapted the movie and made it into a book form with like stills from the movie. And really? I had never watched the movie. I actually read it
like a narrative.
Yeah. So it's like a shorter book.
Yeah.
But they had all the moments. You got the snakes, snake pit, like Marion, the hand, everything is in it. It's just, you read it instead. And it's kind of like that teenage zone of books. And that's kind of how I came onto the story in the first place. But I think because of that, seeing those like images in my mind, literally images in my mind that were just there with the snake pit and stuff. And of course the rolling boulder, all of those moments together just make this what it is. And one of my favorite stories is that whole, when the guy has the knife and he's wielding it and doing all the things, and then he just shoots him. I love that that was the only reason they shot that was because they were supposed to have a big fight and he was sick and he couldn't perform the fight. So he was tired. Yeah, he was tired.
It's like, sick. Can I just shoot him?
And that's what they did. So that I love those little movie making backstories as well. So that's why I know I jumped at 1 and 2, but I had to explain why I chose 2 instead of 1 and stuff.
JB, it's our podcast. We can make up the rules however we want. I will interject before I get to mine. If you've the original, if you go down some YouTube rabbit trails of listening to George Lucas and Steven Spielberg talk about how they created this character and series and like why they did it, it is so much fun. I mean, this is Raiders of the Lost Ark was just pure fun for these two guys. Like, they had nothing to prove, nothing to earn here. They're just going, hey, we've arrived in our careers where we can kind of do whatever we want. Let's do whatever we want. And this is what they came up with. And to hear them talk about it is just really fun, especially, I mean, two guys that we love their movies so much. It's definitely worth listening to. And I think the bonus features of Kingdom of Crystal Skull is better than the movie itself, because you get some of those conversations from Lucas and Spielberg on all of that. My number 2 is Temple of Doom. This was actually one of my favorite movies as a kid. I think in part because of Short Round, like you get some, you connect well with him as a kid. I love everything from the monkey brains and the weird food scene at the beginning. The whole like
you loved everything things, I hated. Like, you loved everything I hated.
It was like the voodoo, like even some of the like kind of crazy ritualistic stuff. Like I remember that like terrifying me as a kid, but like terrifying me in such a way like I couldn't.
It terrified me as an adult.
Eyes away. The mine car chase in that scene, all of that is one of my absolute favorites. I think it is a good old timey, like a good era adventure movie. And I love it. And what you find is like what you said about Temple of Doom doesn't surprise me. A lot of Indiana Jones people feel kind of the same one, feel the same way and all of that. What's very interesting is Temple of Doom technically is not a sequel. It's a prequel. You go back. It is in the timeline pre Raiders of the Lost Ark. You gotta catch that there. But number 1 for me, without a doubt, The Last Crusade. Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade, from beginning to end, for me, perfect movie. Maybe cracks like top 5, top 10 movies of all time for me. I love the opening sequence with young Indiana Jones, played by River Phoenix. That whole sequence, and then how that connects in and kind of leads into it all. Sean Connery, of course, making an appearance and all that. You've got him like stumbling into a book burning in Berlin and Hitler signs his book. Like little moments like that, I absolutely love. So this movie also got just seared into my head. I had the privilege of actually visiting Petra, the location where the Holy Grail is, quote unquote, in the movie. And yes, I mimicked a galloping horse with my hands and like sang the theme song with a friend, a mutual friend of ours, going through there singing dun 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 dun, because we happen to be the only people there, and you know, quote unquote, rode into the Holy Grail there. So that just kind of like, if it wasn't already, boom, sealed. It is now like my absolute favorite. Just that movie. And I got to say, one of the things I liked about Dial of Destiny that for me really recalled well back to The Last Crusade is the globetrotting. Both of those movies have a good amount of globetrotting, yeah, where you kind of go around a lot. And I think for me, one of the things I liked about Dial of Destiny is kind of a recall back to that, that you've got a good amount of globetrotting and all those. And had I could have used a little bit more of a map sequence, you know, me and maps. They had a little bit of there in the Dial of Destiny, but that's part of the reason I like The Last Crusade, is just such great map sequences.
You do love your map sequences.
Yeah, love my map sequences. So yeah, that's for me. Number five, Kingdom of Crystal Skull. Four, Dial of Destiny. Three, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Two, Temple of Doom. And number one, The Last Crusade.
I think we both enjoyed this movie, Eddie. Both you and I, we both enjoyed Dial of Destiny.
I texted my mother and said, you need to go see this movie.
Was she on the fence?
And she loves Indiana Jones. Like, part of the reason why, like, Mom and I would watch this all the time growing up. She's like, I don't know. I don't think your dad would enjoy it. I'm like, go grab one of your grandsons. Like, you know, you don't have to go to the movies with dad anymore. You've got grandsons there.
I almost took my son to see this. I thought about doing it, and there's a part of me that maybe could have. I think a couple too many longer monologues. He would have no idea about Nazi history and stuff like that. Sure. But I almost took him, and there's a part of me that almost wishes.
Have you shown him any of the old ones?
I haven't yet. It might be that time. Probably not Temple of Doom, but maybe Raiders of the Lost Ark. I think he'd like that.
Did you know Temple of Doom is why we have a PG-13 rating?
Oh, that makes sense.
So quickly, prior to Temple of Doom, we only had PG, and then it jumped up to R. And so they actually rated Temple of Doom PG. And theaters were an outrage because so many kids went into this,
yep,
knowing Raiders. Okay, we're going to get something very similar to Raiders. Oh, and it has a PG rating. And then they're pulling, beating hearts out of men's chests, you know, like, and so kids are running out of theaters screaming and everything. So the rating system created a PG-13. I don't know if it actually went on Temple of Doom, but the very, you know, after that, they started the other category.
Little history nuggets for all of our listeners out there. So yes, go check it out. This is one of the few times that we are telling people, yeah, no, go see it. It's been a while since we've had like a, hey, you should go watch this. You should go see this, other than if we're just telling
people.
In theaters. Oh yeah.
It's totally a big screen, good sound, totally worth it. Yep.
So that's our review of Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. And with that, your life has been forever changed by another episode of Honey, We Made a Disney Podcast.
Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your other favorite podcast. And while you're there, please leave us a 5-star review and share it with your best friend.
You can also check us out at honeywemade.com, where you can see our full movie list as we continue to go through all of the Disney movies from 1988 to 2005, including next week, when we finally review, after multiple weeks of pushing it off, we're going to finally review 2005 movie Sky High.
Thank you for listening. And remember, I miss the desert. I miss the sea. And I miss waking up every morning wondering what wonderful adventure the new day may bring us.